Group meeting, Friday, 6th January, 1984. Mankind, through the ages, has always separated spirit and matter. God and man, and God's world. Now this is really what may be called our sinful state. Because in actuality, there is only the unitary whole, what I have sometimes called the one total reality. It is extremely difficult for us human beings to free ourselves from this illusion of separateness. It's a tremendous illusion. And it is there primarily because of our constitution and the way it functions. When I say constitution, I don't mean merely the physical body, but the entire psychophysical organism. We have come to the point in our evolution where we have at least begun to realize that the organism, which goes by our name in the outer world, is not just a body, but a psychophysical organism. We have at least begun to realize the unity with the psyche. Others say that it is a mind-body organism. But I personally, admittedly, it is arbitrary on my part, but I find it very useful. I personally do not call it a mind-body organism, but a psychophysical organism. The difference is just this. Mind, in actuality, is the archetypal form in which the primordial, undifferentiated, creative energy, which is the origin of everything, expresses itself. When it expresses itself as mind, it brings to bear a formative influence. The origin is formless, shapeless, timeless, spaceless. It's minus everything that we human beings can talk of. That's what the origin is. But this origin is capable of functioning in terms of all that it holds in potentiality. It holds the totality in potentiality. So when this potentiality begins to come out, to emanate, to manifest, then we get, to a certain extent, what we may call separation. I say that we may call it that. I don't call it that. I say that every single thing is the totality. The atom is the total universe, including everything we call spiritual or transcendent. And anything bigger than the atom or smaller than the atom is the same. Everything is contained in whatsoever we experience and observe as separate things. Now, I particularly do not wish anyone to believe that. or to think that, oh, Firoz has said this and it must be true. Not at all. Far from it. That is how I happen to see things, you see. There may be, in fact I'm sure there will be in future decades, somebody who will give a better presentation in thought and speech. But to me, this is how it all appears, that there is this complete and absolute unity. The unitary whole is the unitary whole as a whole. We can imagine that. But we can't imagine how every single particular that composes the universe, the material particularly, you see, how on earth it can be the total whole. But I say that's how it is. One may feel this is a dogmatic statement. In a sense, it is dogmatic, but it is not dogmatic in the way in which religions in the world are full of dogmas. Those dogmas exist like this. The statement is made, and that is the final and absolute truth, and there is no other. Now that is a horrible mistake, a mistake so horrible that it has been responsible for the dreadful wars and conflicts within a single religious fold and in terms of one fold, one religion as against another. So I look at it in the way that I do look at it, that everything is a unitary whole within the total unitary whole as such. Now there are great advantages as far as one's understanding and one's living as a human being goes. We think in terms of a body which dies and something else which is permanent. It continues forever. We call it a spark of the divine. We call it the immortal spirit or the soul. And we have also invented, in connection with this idea of the immortal soul, in connection with this continuity, we have built up all our ideas about reward and punishment. You see? Heaven and hell, and so forth. Now that is all completely nonsensical. There is no such thing as a hereafter for the individual at the death of the body, because the body itself is this totality. That which is the transcendent embodied here, the transcendent materialized as the body and showing itself in bodily terms, that which is transcendent belongs to the context of the infinite and the eternal. Now all these religions have presented this idiotic idea of heaven and hell afterwards as a reward or punishment for what the psychophysical organism did. You may ask me, well, what happens then when the body dies, the psychophysical organism dies? The body, of course, as we know, all the atoms go back to the universal stock of atoms. The embodied transcendence finds its release. And it is not the release of a particular separate embodied transcendence. Because if there were, then it would be legitimate to say that is my spirit, my soul. But you can't You can't talk of anything which belongs to infinity and eternity in terms of mind. There is no cutting up of infinity and eternity. See, this is the mistake people have made throughout the ages. They've never seen it. They've also never seen how is it possible for a finite, limited human being who can exercise only so much energy, because his energy is limited, in doing good or in doing evil. How on earth that finite good or finite evil can deserve or have after the death of the body an infinite, eternal heaven or hell is perfectly... Well, I say that it's only the idiot who thinks that way. Consider this idea of my soul. Note the phrase. It's a possessive phrase. And it wants to possess the finite psychophysical organism which perishes, wants to possess that which is infinite and eternal and which cannot be split up. What I say is this: the totality of the infinite, the totality of the eternal, which is only using another word for the one thing only, that is the one, the absolute one, you see. It is our way of cutting up that thing. Well, it just can't be done. We can't even cut up space and put a label upon the portion you cut up and say, this is my space. God, man, the universe, the devil, no entry here. Keep out. This is mine. You see, think this sort of thing. And to talk of my soul, therefore, or my spirit, is a complete absurdity. The totality may say, my John, my Mary, you see, and so forth. That is possible. That is conceivable. The totality can claim the particular. Because the particular is the perishable. The totality is the imperishable. How can this silly little perishable unit claim possession of totality? Perfectly ridiculous. Now think of the advantage of being free of these delusions of this type. So much fear, so much anxiety, so many absurd ideas, beliefs, conceptions, they all fly out. You see, the extraordinary degree of fear which is instilled into the child right from the beginning of its life, if it is brought up with the conventional teachings of any of the religions, including the religions which talk about rebirth and karma and so forth. A million lives, 20 million lives or whatever it is, you work out all that you have done till you reach nirvana. You never reach nirvana. Nirvana is not the thing to reach. Nirvana means, this is the literal and true meaning, it is the extinction of greed, hate, fear, delusion, violence, partiality, and all that sort of thing in me, myself. That is what nirvana means. But if the individual does that and arrives at that state of complete purification, he experiences a permanent peace of mind which is ineffable. The peace that passeth understanding, as it is put in Christian writings. See, this is the bliss of nirvana. The bliss, one should say, this is the bliss that is the result of nirvana. The extinction of all that is evil in us. You see. Now, that's one great advantage. The elimination of all fear and anxiety. Also, it will eliminate all sense of separateness from anybody and everybody. Think of the number of people whom we cannot stand. I myself know from my own experience. Can't stand so and so because there is something which is like this or like that. And why can't I stand it? Because I don't like it. You see? But the universe doesn't run according to my likes and dislikes. What am I shouting about? Isn't it absurd? So you see, one is able to be in relationship, in right relationship, which means in harmonious relationship with anything and everybody. With anybody and anything. Now that right relationship, the realization of that right relationship, is one of the great purposes of our existence on this globe. What is the purpose of human existence? That is one of the purposes of human existence. Because if we can develop that way, then we shall be a force in releasing a true human race. Humanity will be there and develop. Look at us today in the modern world, after thousands and thousands of years, well, millions of years on the globe since we started. The hominids, that's us, you see. We are descended from an ancestor who goes back several million years. Several million years. And what is our state today? Look at the wars that take place constantly. Look at man in this state of fear and anxiety lest he be exterminated and so forth. One may almost say, serve him right if he is such a foolish creature. But it's an unkind way of looking at him. Look at all the conflicts that take place, which after all are wars on a small scale, between members of a single nation. All the strikes and the harm done to one another. Look at the actual murders that take place every day. There's not a day when people aren't murdered ruthlessly, cruelly. Little children being murdered and things like that. This country, which is supposed to be the most advanced country in the world, in certain respects it is, perhaps, this country produces people who murder children. Now, that's not an indication that we are truly human. We are subhuman in a very great degree, in a degree which in so many cases turns to sheer inhumanity. So we have to realize that if we can be free of all our illusions as regards ourselves, our life, our destiny, our fulfillment, and all the rest of it, then there will be some sort of chance for real fulfillment, real harmony, real love, wisdom, beauty, goodness to flourish. Otherwise there won't. Now there is another very, very important aspect of realizing that there is no hereafter for the individual as such. You see, we have a natural instinct for survival, for physical survival. But that instinct for physical survival is associated with the psychological longing for some sort of personal, separate personal existence. Now this longing for a separate personal existence is a complete and a total mistake. We say, my immortal soul, my immortal spirit, and it will go to heaven or hell. And I have tried to suggest how the idea of my immortal soul or spirit is a complete illusion. That is only the totality, the absolute, God, if you like to use that word. It's a simple word, and that's its very great advantage. Just a monosyllable. God, if you like, you see, is embodied in everything. And when those things, these are perishable things, when they die, when they perish, God is still God in His totality, in His absoluteness. He would have to punish Himself if I, a wicked man, died. Don't you see? He would have to reward Himself. And if you look at the ways in which the rewards and punishments have been described in all the religious texts of the world, they are only the products of a lunatic mind. For example, in Zarathustrianism, mind you, this was not taught by Zarathustra. What he taught was this, that evil comes to him, to the evil doer, good and blessings come to the good doer. That's all he said, you see. But in, about 13 or 14 centuries after his death, at least 13 or 14 centuries after his death, the people kept adding to the original teachings of Zarathustrianism. And then they gave a description, actual description of heaven and hell, and of the bridge of judgment, as it is called, which connects this world with the other world. The bridge is supposed to start on the heights of the Elbers Mountains, which is in the north of Iran, you see, where Zarathustrianism spread. Starts there and goes into the other world, you see, and so forth. And if you've been very good, you will sit on golden thrones and on lovely carpets and comfortable cushions decorated with jewelry and so forth. And you will wear, if you are a famous warrior, you will have golden armor and all that kind of thing. And you will have wonderful food, the ambrosia which the angels eat. And if you are in the other place, the exact opposite of all this will happen. Now, I ask you, how can human beings be such idiots? How can you have material descriptions of an immaterial region? It's impossible. Look at Dante's Inferno. Look at the frescoes on the walls of Buddhist temples, which I have myself seen in Sri Lanka. I saw several of these in the frescoes, and they all the religions seem to have fallen into this hellish pit of the most awful descriptions they can give. Look at Milton describing hell. Now, he was wonderfully poetic, and it's great poetry, but it's absolute nonsense where hell or heaven is concerned. Look at Dante's Inferno, his Purgatorio. His Paradiso is wonderful because he sort of reached the supreme heights as a mystic in the latter part of his life, and therefore was able to present things in this manner. The language is something absolutely unsurpassed. But apart from all that, it is all sheer foolishness. Now you see, to want to have a... And when we want a heaven or a hell afterwards, we want it permanently. For the Buddhist and the Hindu, it will be a permanent nirvana, a permanent state of bliss. Supposing you get a bit bored in heaven. You can't get out of it. What are you going to do then? Oh. So, I think the time has come, the age has dawned, when we can be free of these innumerable illusions and delusions which we have. You see, all these ideas, these beliefs, are forced upon us right through from our childhood onwards. You see? The tragedy is that those who are not concerned with any sort of religious education for their infants, you see, they let the infants go wild, completely self-centered. They don't teach them the simple moralities of considerateness, of unselfishness, of patience, of forbearance. Oh no. Is it any wonder that the world today, after 3 or 4 millions on the globe, that the human race today, after 3 or 4 millions on the globe, is as wild and stupid and evil as it is? No wonder. But if we can be free of these illusions, see them as illusions, not demand anything of life, but understand that the joy of living is in giving to life all the time. And give without being obsessed by the idea, I must give to life, I am a good fellow giving to life, and so forth, which is also perfectly stupid and self-centered. Just be good because you can't help being good. You can't avoid it. People will say, yes, but how on earth can you do such a thing? It really is, admittedly, it is extremely difficult on the one hand, and it is very, very easy on the other hand. Supposing a schoolboy gets angry or wants to biff the other fellow, knock him down, you see. Trevor and Kevin will appreciate the point. You see, supposing that is the case, we must help that child just to be quiet and look at his anger. Look at what he is going to do or trying to do. And after a while, if he will restrain himself from the evil act, he will find that psychical energy which wanted to do ill will just calm down. Every storm on the earth comes to an end. However terrible the hurricane may be, it ends. It's true that lots of other storms follow, and so forth. But it won't be true in the case of an intelligent human being. This is the way to begin cultivating intelligence, whether we are children, helped by their parents and teachers and friends, or whether we are adults. If we can learn just to observe very carefully, observe. And to observe means not merely to look at something which is happening as separate from yourself only. Of course, the thing which is happening there is at a distance. So when I'm looking with my eyes, of course it is at a distance. But as I'm looking with my eyes, what is my brain doing? How, in what manner is it talking back at what I am seeing? Or when I hear the news, what sort of feelings and emotions and thoughts as to what should be done arise? And just look at them. Don't stop them. Don't repress them. Because then they will only be swept under the carpet, so to say, and it will make life even more difficult afterwards. But look at them quietly, steadily. Keep on looking. If you feel rage, observe. I am in a rage. Yes, this is how it is working. This is what it is driving me to do. All right? Look at it, look at it, look at it. And after a time, you will find that the rage has disappeared. It will just be a little disturbance in the atmosphere and it's finished. It has not produced any positive evil effect. And you will understand thereby that this is what I still am like. I am still like this, capable of rage, hate, and so forth. You see? Jesus, you know how Jesus said, "Watch therefore and pray." Watch. He didn't mean watch the traffic in Piccadilly Circus. Obviously. Or even in Jerusalem. Watch this. This is the inner world where all this disturbance and upheaval goes on all the time, non-stop. And all the good things also go on in this world. But our good is a relative good, it's not an absolute good. For the very simple reason that we are not conscious of that good completely. When we become conscious of kindness completely and totally, you will find that every single thought and feeling, word and deed will be kind. And it will be kind naturally, not because you say, "I ought to be kind." This is the great point. You are naturally then human, the happy creator. We say God is love. We say God is the Almighty. God is the creator of everything. We become godlike. And you see, the thing is, all this is for the well-being and the happiness of man. The great teachers taught what they taught for the sake of human beings. I said in one of our recent meetings that they were the real socialists of the world. They had a consciousness not of I and this fellow and that fellow. They had a consciousness which embraced everybody, us. You will find that there will take place this tremendous transformation, this transmutation of the separate self-consciousness, I am I, into the consciousness of us. And when that is the case, then you will inevitably, naturally, spontaneously and invariably totally live for the well-being of mankind, not of just this person or that person, or this nation or that nation. Of course, one can see this is extremely difficult. One thing we must beware of, don't make it an ambition to become conscious in this way. Don't make it an ambition to become purified and perfect, the perfect and holy one. Watch a bud, how it in little spurts naturally and sweetly opens out like that. And the marvelous thing about the bud, it doesn't know that it has become the flower. And this is the meaning of perfection. You take a great artist, he paints, and paints a perfect, exquisite picture, we'll say. He can look at it critically and as if he were an outsider looking at it. But on the whole, if it is all right, he knows it's all right. And that's all. Take a great pianist, for instance. I have heard the world's greatest pianists the last 60 years, 62 years. Yes, 1921 to 1984. I've heard so many of them, you see. And when you get the perfect artist as he performs, it's no longer him performing. There is perfect performance, which involved the player and the instrument. I remember this particularly when I heard Paderewski, 1923, I think, when he gave a recital at the Queen's Hall. He started very nervously. He always did. You could almost see his hands shaking as he started playing the piano and so on. And then as he went on and got into his stride, so to say, played perfectly. And at the end, the applause, demanding encore after encore. And he'd come and play. And you know, I really experienced the reality of, it wasn't Jan Paderewski, Polish pianist. It was something divine, absolutely divine, perfect. That was heaven. Our heaven and hell is here, of our making. So, try and see if through 1984 we can be completely free of all our illusions, our beliefs, our convictions. We are convinced this is so. People might say to me, Aren't you convinced when you talk of primordial creative energies and so forth? Yes and no. It can be put in a better form, maybe. The absolute truth is the prerogative of God, not of me. That is how it is. So, try and work upon this and realize that freedom here and now. And in that will be your well-being, your happiness, your fruition, and your precious gift to mankind as a whole, that you were you like that.